I get those goosebumps every time, yeah. You come around, yeah. You ease my mind, you make everything feel fine. Worry about those comments, I'm way too numb, yeah. It's way too dumb, yeah.
I get those goosebumps every time.
And here we go, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's Overtime with William Pattison, Dawson Wise, and Jace Brown joining you on a Monday, a victory Monday. A lot of great content in the first hour as we talked about the Vols' big win over the Tide as they surfed the Tide, if you will. And also we covered the Diamond Vols sweeping the Bowling Green Falcons. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop in and join. Later on the hour, we'll talk about the college basketball weekend recap. We'll give our opinions on some of the biggest games from the week, and we'll also dive into the Lady Vols' fight against South Carolina yesterday, not able to get it done. We'll dive into that one as well. But we begin the hour with heading to the phones, and we've got Joshy Boy on the line. What's up, Joshy?
What up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Good. I'm also on Duke with you tonight as well.
All right, yeah. I think it's a good opportunity for them. The better offense, really good defense.
But I didn't get 5.5. I got 6.5.
Okay, yeah, I got 5.5.
You like it at 6.5?
Yeah, I mean, I think 5.5, 6.5, really, you're bargaining a point. I don't think this game will be that close. And not saying it's going to be a blowout, but I think this is about a 10-point win, 8-point win for them, so I still like it at 6.5.
I got a parlay for you guys if you want to hear it.
All right, hit us with it.
We're heading to the NBA. This is a plus 578.
All right. Ooh.
We're rolling with James Harden over 16.5 points.
Okay.
We're rolling with LeBron James over 7.5 assists.
Okay.
And the last leg, we're going with Lonnie Walker, 10-plus points, playing the Memphis Grizzlies with both Ben Simmons and Cam Thomas out. I think his minutes increase, and I think he hits this mark.
Yeah, a couple of Grizzlies out as well. I think that might affect that too. I think it was Jaren. Let me double check real quick. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, so you're missing. No Jaren Jackson Jr. tonight. That'll help him be able to drive to the paint. I just want to double check on that. But yeah, so. No Ben Simmons, that helps him rotational-wise, and no Jaren Jackson Jr. Allows Walker to attack the paint like he's really good at. So, yeah, I like those.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about this week with the Vols heading to South Carolina and playing Kentucky at home for Senior Day?
Yeah, look, you got two more opportunities to boost your resume is the way I look at it. And if you want to – let the naysayers know. I know we just beat the team that says that. But if you want to let the naysayers know that we should be a one seed, you've got two opportunities this weekend to do that. And it begins with South Carolina and then finishes with Kentucky at home. I think if you're able to win both those games, both quad one games, that'd give you 8 quad one wins on the season. And I think your resume would be head over heels better than Arizona, even though it's already better right now. I think if you're able to win both these games, I think you're the one seed. And you'd have the number one seed in the SEC tournament. Would really only have to win one game, I'd say, in the tournament just to kind of give you that little cushion, you will, for the one seed. But I think this is the opportunity this week to finish the job and solidify yourself as a one seed.
So, great sleep for the Diamond Vols this week against Bowling Green.
Yeah.
They play Kansas State tomorrow, and I heard where Kansas State is throwing out their ace tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, do you guys know anything about K-State, if they're good this season or not?
I know they're a pretty talented team.
I know they're sitting at like 7-3.
I haven't read a bunch on them, but I know they're a pretty talented team. This is going to be a fun non-conference game.
Yeah. This game probably kind of reminds me of was it Boston College or Wake Forest we played last year in the midweek non-conference game?
Boston College.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the upper hand of us.
Yeah, Boston College. I think we played them in a weekend series, I thought.
Was it a midweek.
Oh.
Yeah, it was like a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Weird.
So Need didn't pitch this week, right?
Correct. Yeah, he didn't pitch this week.
Do you think he'll get the start tomorrow?
Yeah.
I think there's a chance. I mean, I don't think you're going to trot Seacrest back out there after the turd he threw out last night.
Right.
You know, but I think Snead's probably your best option rolling in, especially, you know, well-rested and still looking to prove a point where maybe he can take a weekend spot from somebody.
Yeah, I agree with that. So if the Vols win Wednesday at South Carolina, they at least clinch a share out of the SEC.
Yeah, yeah. They would clinch the share. I think they would. They not clinch the whole thing if they went on Wednesday?
I think
they would
because
of the tiebreaker over Kentucky.
Because
and the tiebreaker over Bama if they win.
Well,
both.
You still have the opportunity with Kentucky.
The Kentucky game.
Yeah.
But that would take Alabama completely out of it. And you've already got a healthy lead over them. I think if you win on Wednesday is what clinches it.
I can't remember.
I'd have to look at what Kentucky's at right now.
I don't think they're in contention.
Wins, right.
I think they're like two or three games, maybe three games back at this point.
Let me get a confirmation real quick. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Okay.
404. No. let's see. Because I'm pretty sure if you win on, let's see. All right. Yeah, you would. Yeah, Tennessee has – I mean, because they have the tiebreaker over Auburn. Tennessee would have to lose both games to have a share of it at this point because you'd have a share of it you've got to beat South Carolina. You've got to beat South Carolina.
And you win outright.
And you win outright because Kentucky won't be able to get up there and wins. Now, if Kentucky wins out, they could share it if they beat you on Sunday, but then I think it'd go to point differential too.
I think it would.
Yeah. So South Carolina, if you win it, you win the whole thing.
Yeah. So do you guys like want a one seed? Because I'm in the camp. It really doesn't matter to me if we get a one or two seed. I just want the best possible matchup on Sunday.
It's tough.
You know, I mean. I think seeding sometimes gets a little too overdone, but I think a one seed does give you the most favorable path in the tournament in terms of the seeding you're going to play.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a reason why the one seeds are rewarded the one seeds.
Right.
And that would, you know, you get a cupcake 16 seed, most likely. Now, we saw, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson win last year, but you get the easiest opening matchup of the weekend. And then you play an 8-9 team, and those are teams that barely got into the tournament, you know, bubble teams, fringe teams for a majority of the year, a lot of bad losses, a couple of good wins kept them around. You know, would you rather be a one seed or a two seed? I think it's just a preference. I mean,
yeah. The problem is it's just the bracket I saw for if we end up in the one seed, which right now would be the West region, was not favorable once you got past those first two games because Arizona slots in as your number two seed. You just flip-flop places with them, whereas right now you kind of have the freedom to go all over the place if you're a two. I've seen us with Purdue. I've seen us with Houston. I've seen us with Arizona. So for me, if it's that bracket I saw with us as a one seed, I'd rather be a two.
Yeah.
Right.
But the thing with the one seed is you definitely avoid Houston, Purdue, and all
that's
the
true.
Other
yeah,
ones.
That's true. Yeah, you do. You do. So, and that's a great point, Joshy, because I think when you look at the possible teams that could give Tennessee a lot of problems, I think you think of Houston and UConn. Those are both locked-in one seeds.
Right.
Yeah.
And Arizona, I think, is a very beatable team. We've seen it this season.
Oh, yeah.
So I think a one seed could be important. I mean, because in the situation, and I'm, you know, just, you know, venting here hypothetically, but, you know, Tennessee gets into a slate with Houston as the one seed or UConn as the one seed. That's a really tough draw for them. And most likely would be Houston, I think, at this point, or Arizona. But I think if you're able to get a one seed, I think there's a reason why the best teams get the one seed. It's the easiest possible path you could have based on what you did this season. That takes some stress off, at least for the first game. Hopefully it should. You know, I playing a 16 seed is not a bad way to start a tournament, right? Usually.
Guys, out the door, if they get in the tournament, I wouldn't be surprised if this Cinderella makes some noise. McNeese State, they Will Wade is coach, yeah. And they got some guys on that roster that could probably play at the D1 level. Y'all have a good night.
Yeah, you as well, Josh. Thank you for calling in. Yeah, the Cowboys are, I think, 14-1 in conference play under Will Wade. Their only flaw is their tallest guy, I think, is 6'7". And you traditionally see that with these teams because, I mean, they're not – if you're a 7-footer, you're probably getting dragged to – at least, you know, like a Tamba. You know, Tamba was even on Tennessee's roster as a 7'2 guy. But you're usually going to be finding a little bit of a more appealing spot. I like McNeese State a lot. Will Wade's had plenty of success with VCU and LSU. But I think their one thing they do lack is size. But a lot of those teams do. And in the first couple of rounds, good guard play wins games, and that's what they have. They got three of them who I think combined for 45 points in total. So, yeah, they're a team to watch out for. There are a couple teams to watch out for. A Grand Canyon, a team we've talked about on here, the Lopes, coached by Coach Drew, who was at Vanderbilt. They're a team to watch out for. Indiana State is a team that Jordan Moore and I both like. Mm-hmm. And they're one of the most efficient offensive teams in basketball. There are a lot of potential Cinderella upset mid-major teams. Loyola Chicago could make a little bit of noise if they're able to win
A-10. Yeah.
I mean, they just went and beat Dayton at home. That's their first ranked win ever at home, by the way.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
I guess they're not having the opportunity to play many of them.
Right.
But cool little fact there. All right. As we talk about college basketball, let's move on into our college basketball segment. In the weekend recap from this weekend, the first Saturday of March provided one of the best days of the men's basketball season. Several teams show they belong in the NCAA tournament, while others may have fallen out of a at-large consideration altogether. Other teams secured conference titles, while others missed out on their league's crown. Let's begin with Creighton. Number 12 Creighton gets a big win over number 5 Marquette. Creighton beat Marquette 89-75, controlled. The Blue Jays controlled the majority of the game, but Marquette attempted several times to come back down the stretch. Creighton held tough, capitalizing on absences by Tyler Kolick and Osu Igodoro. Two guys are big pieces for them. Kolick also out the remaining of the regular season. I woke up this morning. I guess I didn't wake up and see it because it came out at like 2. Kolick, I originally read he was out for the remainder of the season. I did not see the regular season in print. That's very significant, but he also will be reevaluated before the Big East tournament. We'll talk more about that here in a second. But Baylor Schreierman, a game-high 26 points. Ryan Kalkbrenner, 19. Trey Alexander with a double-double. Blue Jays were hitting on all cylinders late, were able to pull away with that one. Cam Jones from Marquette did shine. He had 23. David Joplin with 21, even despite the absences to Igodoro and Kolick. We'll begin with this. Is Creighton a dark horse championship contender?
Yeah, I think they are. I've been saying for weeks that they are. Their core is a blend of talent and experience. Guys that have been there before and are able to step up in the big moments, they do so again this past weekend against Marquette, all put on a show, Shireman especially. And they've been outstanding all year. Those three guys really have been great from the start of the year, but especially lately. It feels like they're hitting their stride as well as we get closer to this tournament. That's another big win for them. Add on to their wins over the last couple of weeks, headlined by that win against UConn a couple of weeks back that we talked about on here. Gutsy win at home, big win at home over UConn. They had another top five win in conference with Marquette. I think it does make them a dark horse title contender and another team I just would not want to see in March.
Yeah, I absolutely think that they have. Like you said, they've shown up and won several big games, like you said, this past weekend with Marquette. UConn had that one by like 20 or something over in Omaha. And they also beat Alabama earlier this year. So I think that's another big one that you can throw in there. And they fit that title contention criteria where it's like top 40 offense and top 25 defense. They've got the number 12 offense and the number 22 defense in the KenPom rankings. So this team fits everything that you need for a national title contention, and they've been playing really good as of late. So, I mean, them rolling through the Big East tournament coming up and eventually rolling through March Madness could be trouble for everybody else.
Yeah, depending on their draw in the tournament, this team I've been kind of looking at for the last 3 weeks is a possible team that could win it all, and I really do believe it. The only thing they lack is depth. They only play about seven guys. On Saturday, only six players played more than 14 minutes out of the eight players that played, so that's something to note. They're not very deep, but this team matches up against anyone in the country and poses a matchup issue for a lot of teams in the country. I think this is like UConn Junior. I really do. They've got a big and Ryan Kalkbrenner. They've got multiple guys on the perimeter that can shoot, and they've got a guard that can distribute and make plays. I think this is a very good Crane team. A couple more stats about them. Crane is the only team in college basketball with 7-plus quad one wins and 7-plus quad two wins. Only team in basketball with those numbers. And Crane also boasts two of the two five-man lineups in the top 12 in the net rating when they're all on the court. Tennessee has the number 3-1 with their starting five with Ziegler and Connect and all those guys. They're third, but Crane has two different units in the top 12 in the net rating. They're not very deep, like I said, but they've got a very strong group that they can put out in two different formulas. They also have the highest shot-making ability percentage in the country. When they have the opportunity to get open shots, they hit them, and they have the highest shot-making ability in the country. As you said, Jace, 12th in adjusted offense, 22 in adjusted defense, 11 overall. This Crane team is really good, and I think they have the opportunity to run the table. It all depends on who they draw, and really in any team, it depends on who you draw, but I think Crane poses a lot of problems for a lot of teams in the country, and this is definitely a team to watch out for. Now, as we mentioned earlier, Tyler Kolek will miss the remainder of the regular season, will be reevaluated before the Big East tournament. Is Kolek's health more concerning than it may seem?
Yes. I don't think he's a player that they can afford to lose in the postseason by any means. One of the centerpieces of the team, one of the reasons they're ranked number five in the country and that they were playing so well. Now, a gutsy effort on Saturday without two of those guys, including Kolek, kept him in it, and that was, you know, really encouraging for that team to be able to do that without those guys. But I mean, long term, you can't do that and expect to make a deep tournament run. You need guys like this. This is one of those players you just cannot afford to lose. And if they do, they're just not going to go very far. I don't think he's that type of player for them.
Yeah, it's still very concerning. I mean, he's your number one guy. You know, preseason he was one of the top picks for the National Point Guard of the Year award. He looks like he very well could win that for the Golden Eagles. So, you know, any team is going to struggle without a guy like that can come in and put up, what, 20-plus a game and just be effective passing the ball as well as a facilitator. So, again, you take that away from any team and they're going to feel it.
Yeah, so Kolek ranks second in the nation for players with the best statistical output this season. That's a guy that's very valuable to this team. And, you know, he missed Saturday. They didn't rule him out till late. And they're going ahead and making it known he's out for the rest of the regular season. I'm sure it's just precautionary, but I think it's something to look into, because if he's not well enough to play the rest of the regular season, I know it's just a week, but what is his health status as we get closer to the tournament? We're two weeks away. So to be having these kind of injuries right now is a little bit scary for if I'm a Golden Eagles fan. I'm a little bit scared of this because this is a very concerning injury. They're not the same team without him, and his impact goes beyond just the points he can put up for this team. They got a really good guard tandem with Kolek and Cam Jones. They need those guys to be able to make a run come March. Now let's move over to the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga, a really good week for them. Number 23 Gonzaga gets a rivalry win over number 17 St. Mary's. St. Mary's is the hottest team in college basketball going into Saturday, and Gonzaga went in there and held, stood on business. You know, business, yeah. as you said.
Come on, keep going back.
Huge win for the Zags. I think they secure an NCAA tournament berth with this one. Graham Ike, Andrew Nembhard, firing on all cylinders in this one, scoring 24 and grabbing 10 rebounds for Ike and Nembhard with a double-double of 20 and 10. Really good performances from them. St. Mary's was just ousted in this one, really from early on. They're playing at home, and they were down by double digits at halftime. Yeah. Are the Zags trending upwards at the right time?
They are. I mean, this win, their win at Rupp a few weeks ago, I mean, they're starting to get that magic back that we're used to seeing out of Gonzaga teams that we haven't seen this year, that many of us, including myself, thought that they just weren't going to be the same team. You know, they lose some key pieces that helped them win championships for several years. They're not the same team anymore. Well, maybe they are. They're starting to get that swagger back. They're starting to get that connection back that we're used to seeing out of Gonzaga teams. They can just band together and get wins like this. They do it here, and if they continue to do it, again, another team I just do not want to see in March because of what they've done in the past, because of where these guys have been, the experience that they have. They're a good team if you let them get hot, and I think they're getting hot at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely getting hot at the right time. I think this win pushes them from a bubble team to pretty much a lock at this point. I don't think I see a situation where they're not in the tournament right now. And, you know, they're rolling in with into this Western Coast Conference with 8 straight wins, 5 of them being on the road. So, you know, playing good at home, playing good on the road, 1-1, like you said, against St. Mary's on the road. So finding your footing at the right time. Mark Few has made it to like 25 straight NCAA tournaments. I don't think that they'll miss it this year now. So, you know, with a team of that caliber that's been known to make some runs in the tournament, not one that you want to be staring down the barrel on.
Yeah, this is a team that got a huge win over San Francisco the other night. They played at Chase Center where the Warriors play.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga came out in that second half, went on a like 32-6 run, came out just absolutely killed them. This is a team that's trending in the right direction, a really, really good offense. I think their Achilles heel is the defensive side of the ball. They get lost a couple times defensively, also allow a couple just wide-open shots. They've got to tune that up, especially come tournament time. But when this team is rolling offensively, this is a really good squad. Let's move over to the Big 12 now. Number 15, Baylor, uses home court advantage to beat number 7, Kansas. As the road struggles and the struggles for the Jayhawks, period, continue, Baylor winning 82-74. Close game for most of the contest, but the Bears prevail in the clutch moments. prevail in the clutch moments, I should say. Baylor's Ray J. Dennis scored 19 with 10 assists. Jacoby Walker scored 11 with 8 rebounds, and Yves Missy with 17. Kansas now has 7 conference losses, most they've had since 1989. This is a team that's lost 4 out of their last 7. Kevin McClure returned in this one, put up 20. But this is a very concerning loss for this group. Is Kansas in trouble here?
Yeah, concerning, I think, would be the word I would use as well, just because, I mean, yeah, you lose a few earlier in the year, but it was never, they don't look very good. It was just, you know, here and there, the Big 12 likes to do this, especially this year. It feels like they've all kind of beaten up on each other. So the first few, normal. Now this latest stretch, they're just at times not playing very good basketball. They just don't look very good, and they come up against a Baylor team that, quite frankly, needed this one, I think. Coming up short against Houston, I think, kind of made them feel like, okay, we need our statement win in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. They get it in front of what was a raucous crowd on their home floor, a top 10 conference win, and against a team like Kansas that, again, is one of those perennial powers that is kind of, you know, played some rough basketball here lately. Just looked to me like Baylor wanted it more. I don't know if that's the case in Kansas, but it sure seems that way.
Yeah, Kansas, you know, it feels like all year it's kind of been like a roller coaster. You know, you've won some big ones, like you take it to Houston on your home court, and then last week at some point you lose at home to BYU, a team that has not been great this year. I think they've played good enough to contend for, you know, a spot in March Madness, but besides that, haven't really impressed me that much. And Kansas, it's just the inconsistency. It drives me up the walls. You know, Baylor, like you said, Dawson, came out swinging. I think Yves Missy had a huge game, especially in the first half. He came out swinging. And Baylor didn't shy away from the return of Kevin McCullough. I think his return should help them in the long run here, finally getting him back in playing form. But as of right now, Kansas isn't really the scariest team on the lookout right now.
Very concerning loss for Kansas. 4 out of 7 is bad. I understand injuries can play into it, but this team's talented enough, regardless of just McClure's impact on this team. Dwan Harris has been inconsistent, not great. Hunter Dickinson, when he's the when they know McClure's not playing, Dickinson's going to garner a lot more attention. And you saw in instances like Texas Tech, for example, the Red Raiders were all over Dickinson. Kansas is too one-dimensional without McClure. He comes back. I don't think he's 100%. But I will say, Bill Self, you can never not trust this guy come March. So I still do have trust in this team. However, not trending the right way as the season's ending, and usually teams that are trending downward don't do too well come March. So I do think this is a concerning. This is concerning. Now, for Baylor, this is a team that's been heating up as of late. This was a team that was kind of in a rut a couple of weeks ago defensively. Now they've really gotten it going. Even though they lost to Houston last Saturday, or two Saturdays ago, I should say, they were still competitive in that one and really could have come out of there with a win if they were able to convert on a couple of those offensive possessions. Baylor's trending in the right direction. Kansas, on the other hand, not. Let's move to the SEC now. South Carolina, number 18, South Carolina, is able to hold off number 24, Florida. South Carolina protected its home court, but Florida put up a really big fight and were winning that game for a majority of it. And they ended up having a lot of slow possessions, turning the ball over. Not the first time we've seen this team go on the road and suffocate a nice lead. I understand South Carolina's a good team, but I was more disappointed with Florida in this one. Walker Clayton Jr. scored 20 on 6 of 11 shooting. Zylan Poulin added 16. Just wasn't enough to beat this Gamecocks team. With the win, South Carolina jumped into second place in the SEC standings with an outside shot, as we talked about. They have to beat Tennessee this week, and then Tennessee has to lose another one in order for the Gamecocks to take the SEC crown. Should South Carolina be more respected?
I think so. It feels to me like some are discrediting them for a couple of losses earlier in the year, specifically the Alabama loss, where they did get trampled in that game, but they have several statement wins. You beat Kentucky at home. You beat Tennessee on the road. Mm-hmm. You have several of these big game wins to kind of add to your resume, boost your resume. They're currently slated, I think I saw, as like a 6 seed currently in the NCAA tournament, somewhere anywhere between 5 and 7 right now on the bracket. And you jump to second in the SEC. I mean, you know, you can't really discredit a team that's above Alabama, Auburn, and Kentucky in the SEC standings. So I think they should. Again, a team that's very talented, can score a lot of points. Michi Johnson and B.J. Mack, guys we've seen before here in Knoxville, guys we're going to see here in a couple days when the Vols travel to Columbia. A very dangerous team, can beat you on any given night, and I think they should be given more respect.
I also think they should, maybe not the way they play per se, but just how they've been able to win the amount of games that they have. I mean, this is a team, I checked the KenPom rankings, they're about 50 or so on the offense, around the same on the defensive end. I think overall about the 43 in the KenPom rankings. So not so much an overwhelming team, but they've been able to pull games out that they aren't supposed to. Exhibit A, the Tennessee game here at the Food City Center. I mean, nobody thought that they were going to come in and win despite what they had come in with. I think they were sitting at like 17-3 or something like that, left 18-3 out of Knoxville. So, I mean, I think they should more be praised on the way that they've been able to come together and pull out games, especially late in against Florida. I think that was a big one. But still, some question marks just because of the production on either end, but they've been able to find a way. So, like, props to them for that.
All right, now moving to the Big Ten real quick. Number 2, Purdue, and number 13, Illinois, avoid upsets. Purdue survived a scare from Michigan State, a team that it's March, so Tom Izzo.
January, February, Izzo.
Yeah, this is usually when he turns it up, and they were able to give Purdue a fight on the road. Boilermakers ended up winning 80-74, pulling away with a couple of Zach Edey buckets.
Free throws.
Yeah. But he scored 32-11 in one of his best games of the season. Braden Smith also played tremendous, scoring 23. Tyson Walker led the way with 14 for the Spartans. But I think it showed that Purdue, even when tested, can preserve and win a game, very similar to what we saw with Tennessee this past week. Now another team, Illinois, did the same, went to Wisconsin, won 91-83. Marcus Domask, an incredible game for him, his best of the season with 31, and Terrence Shannon Jr., we all know how special he is, with 23. However, on the other side of this, Wisconsin, a team that was in the top 16 teams in the preliminary selection Sunday committee top teams, if you will.
Yeah.
And they've been trending the wrong way for weeks now. What do we make of the Big Ten as a whole in Wisconsin at this point in the season? I'm not very impressed with either.
Big Ten is a weird conference. Feels like they should be better than they are in terms of the quality of the basketball that they're playing. I think Michigan State is a team that many of us did not expect to be a sleeper team in March. They have come alive here over the past several weeks and have now become a team, like I said last week when we were doing bracketology, that I don't want to see if I'm Tennessee in the second round, and it's a potential second round matchup right now for the Vols that I don't want to see. I know you beat them earlier in the year, but first game of the year, exhibition game, how much stock do we really want to give that at this point? So again, a team I don't want to see. I think they're becoming one of those legit Big Ten teams. But on the other side, man, Wisconsin, just inexplicable. I don't get it. Go from decent start. They lose to Tennessee, but they scrapped in that game. Got all the way up to, I think, number six in the country at one point.
Yeah, they were way up there.
And, man, what a fall from grace. And it's just inexplicable. It's a whole different team, and they are falling off a cliff at exactly the wrong time.
Yeah, the Big Ten, it's pretty top-heavy this year. I mean, besides your 1-2, you can maybe throw the 3 in there with Wisconsin. There's not really too many contenders. Of course, Michigan State's going to show up in March, but beyond that, you're sort of reaching with the likes of Nebraska, who's had a one-off year this year. Wisconsin just falling apart wasn't really on my bingo card after the start of the year. The first 2 months, they looked really solid, and then as of late, just really falling apart there. Purdue and Illinois, again, clinging to the top. Not really a surprise. Those, I think, were the two teams that most people had slated up there anyway. So, but overall, just kind of pretty weak for the most part, but I did see an interesting stat. The Big Ten West is the top 7 seeds in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten East takes up the bottom 7. So it's just sort of slated that way for them this year, but overall just not the year for the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think this is a 2-team conference, and then the rest are okay. Yeah. Purdue and Illinois, I'll garner respect for. Northwestern, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Michigan State, maybe Iowa, I'd throw in that mix as well. They've got a lot of mediocre teams. I think Michigan State's better than a couple of these ones ahead of them in the standings, but it's not a very good conference this year. Purdue, Illinois, I totally understand the arguments for them. But the rest, I mean, Nebraska can't win anywhere else but home. Wisconsin can't seem to win a game anymore. Northwestern is hot and cold, both at home and on the road. I don't know what to make of this conference. I don't think that they'll have many teams going past the first two rounds of the tournament outside of Purdue and Wisconsin. Or excuse me, typo, Purdue and Illinois. And I think it just is what it is. Michigan State, if they're able to get a nice draw, I could maybe see them inching to a Sweet 16 berth. But I just don't think it's a very competitive conference this year. I think it's just a lot of mediocre teams that play each other and make them look a little bit better than they actually are. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the Lady Vols. They fight again but fall to the top-ranked Gamecocks right here on Overtime.
A brand built in Tennessee and born from the love of the game. Inward Half revolutionizes golfing comfort. Crafted by a former pro and dedicated enthusiast just like you, our luxury performance wear guarantees you stay cool and comfortable through every swing and every day. We're not just a brand. We've set out to create a lifestyle for those who understand that impeccable style and premium performance are a hole in one. Enjoy the walk in with Inward Half.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel.
Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as a dollar a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at getethos.com. That's getethos.com.
Are you ready to elevate your driving experience? Then you need to head over to your hometown dealership, Parkside Kia, home of the lifetime warranty. Discover the latest Kia cars and SUVs where technology meets style. Our friendly staff is here to make your car buying experience a breeze. Don't wait. Visit Parkside Kia today and drive home in the Kia of your dreams. Check them out online at parksidekia.com and visit their showroom at 9929 Parkside Drive. Parkside Kia, where your journey begins.
Back here on overtime. I don't have anything for this one. Can't really. It's time. It's hard to try and. Being high to what we're about to talk
about.
Yeah,
can't really do that right now. Yeah.
I asked in the room by Travis Scott as you come in. Lady Vols fight again, but fall to the top-ranked Gamecocks. Tennessee continued its strong play to close out the regular season, challenging number one South Carolina fiercely in front of a sold-out Senior Day crowd at Colonial Life Arena before falling 76-68 on Sunday. Lady Vols now dropped to 17-11 and 10-6 in SEC play. They fell behind by 15 in the third period and entered the fourth down 11. Never surrendered and trimmed the deficit to 3 with 4:58 to go. However, the Gamecocks managed to starve off the valiant effort by the Big Orange and improved to 29-0 overall in the season and 16-0 in SEC play. One of the top teams in the country. You knew what you were facing going against Dawn Staley's group. But UT, however, did manage to hold USC to its smallest margin of victory at home all season. And the only one by single digits. It also stands as the third closest win margin of the year behind a six-point triumph at number 9 LSU and a seven-point victory at number 24 North Carolina back in November. Tennessee, which had played the Gamecocks to an 11-point setback in Knoxville, in February, was led in scoring by fifth-year forward Rekia Jackson, who shined the spotlight with 29 points, 8 rebounds, 3 blocks. Jewel Spear, Jasmine Powell also were in double figures, each tallying 12 apiece on the afternoon. South Carolina featured 5 players scoring in double digits, however, led by an 18-point, 14-rebound effort by Camilla Cardoso, and they had a trio, or I guess 5 other players also chip in with double digits. My takeaway from it, I think you continue to fight against the best teams. You did it against LSU. You did it against South Carolina at home. I think what the Lady Vols are lacking is that last wind in the fourth quarter to be able to – look, you're staying in the game the whole time, but to go on a run. They don't have the second kick in to go on a run, and you've seen it a couple times. I think they're a good enough team to maybe win a game or two in the tournament, but when it comes down to the best teams in the country, you've seen it time and time again. They're not able to get that game-winning run, if you will. But I think it was a good effort, and holding South Carolina once again to a really good. You were able to hold them again to a season low total at home. When you just, only held them to an 11-point setback in Knoxville. I think there are wins to take away from this game and the matchups you've had against LSU and South Carolina. Really tough end-of-season schedule. So I think there are good things to take away, but my overall is you're just lacking that second wind and able to take the game.
Yeah, the first one for me is this team's got a ton of fight. This is the closest that they've battled these two teams in a couple of years, besides the win against LSU last year in the SEC tournament, in the SEC semifinal. This is the toughest they've battled these two teams, especially South Carolina. I know you hate moral victories, but to see them battle, especially on the road on Senior Day, the place is sold out, which 18,000 people, I mean, that's more than you've seen in a crowd all year for the Lady Vols. So to be able to go in there into that hostile environment and battle and keep the game close and really – well, you kind of thought it was a lost cause late in the third quarter, down 15. You drag it back to 5 with about 5 minutes to go, just to continue to scrap, continue to stay in this game was huge, and it's promising now headed to the postseason where no more road games. You're going to be in a neutral court here as you head into the postseason. Well, neutral to a degree, obviously playing in Greenville an hour from Columbia here in the SEC tournament. But you head to neutral courts, it's a promising sign. Rakia needs to be great. She's got to be a takeover player. If this team's going to make any kind of run in the tournament, she needs to do this. I mean, she needs to have not 30 a night, 20, 25, something like that, because it allows the Co-Stars to shine if she is on the right page. And she was the other day, by far one of her best efforts of the year, and she can be a real takeover force in a game, and they need to keep on doing that. But the role players are falling flat. This was a rough effort for a few. Better effort for Spear than when we played them in Knoxville. It was a really rough effort for her. She played better. Jasmine Powell was good, but, man, you had some just that did not – like Sarah Puckett was non-existent in this game. Just she could not buy a bucket, could not get anything to go. She turned the ball over several times. And just did not look very good on either end of the floor. Tess Darby was okay. She looked all right. But, again, just not enough production. Hollingshed, 4 points. I think Striplin had 3.
I think Key had 2.
Yeah, Tamari Key. But, I mean, she affected the game in other ways than on the scoreboard. But, I mean, Hollingshed had 4. Again, couldn't buy a bucket. Kaya Wynn couldn't buy a bucket. I mean, he just didn't get enough production from role players.
Yeah.
You see what happened. South Carolina, 6 players in double figures. They win the game. You need to have those kinds of productions, and they did not have that.
Yeah, South Carolina rolled in to Sunday's action with 28 straight wins at home by double digits. Lady Vols broke that, so
go.
I guess another moral victory for you. You take that out of them and take that away from them. But like you said, Dawson, this team is showing fight. I mean, the fourth quarter struggles are still a thing. But, you know, they cut the lead down to 3 in the fourth quarter at one point with about 5 minutes to go. So, I mean, they were still showing that they were in it. But, you know, talent and depth of South Carolina takes over. But Rakia Jackson still playing at an elite level. She's going to have to continue doing that. I'd like to see Jewel Spear sort of take a step back up to where she was at some points this season where, you know, there was a couple times where we saw her get close to 30, if not 30, and shooting the lights out from beyond the arc. So if she can take a step back up there when it gets to when it means the most here, I think this team can win a couple games in the SEC tournament as well as the national tournament. I think that could be good for this team. Good thing for them, they do get one game bye in the SEC tournament, so they get a little bit of extra rest for their legs, but really need to loosen up here or to tighten up here because Rakia Jackson can only do so much for
right.
you.
Yeah, a couple of key numbers from this one. Tennessee shoots 21% from the three-point line, another bad performance.
Combined 9 for 47 between these two games against South Carolina and the game against LSU.
And that's what I was about to allude to. You know, the three biggest games of the year, your biggest opponents, you chose the wrong nights to shoot poorly. And then also the rebound differential in this one, 57 of 41. US did a really good job of dominating the boards, limiting the Vols, second chance point opportunities. And look, USC is a very good team, disciplined, and they've got some girls down there that are able to make sure that they are controlling the paint, and they were able to in a big way with 16. But overall for the game, Tennessee shot better than South Carolina from the field, but you were really lacking those three-point opportunities, and the rebounding, I think, was one of the biggest keys. Also, USC caused 8 Tennessee turnovers and 8 steals, that is, to Tennessee's 2. So South Carolina was also able to get a couple extra opportunities. Want to talk about the fourth quarter here. As you mentioned, Dawson, you know, is that 9 of 47 you said?
Yeah, for the three games combined, South Carolina and LSU.
Yeah. So you're already battling poor three-point shooting performances, and then also just when you think you have life in this one, LSU and South Carolina in all three instances have been able to pull away despite a fight from Tennessee in the fourth quarter. The fourth quarter seemed to be the Vols' Achilles heel almost against the best teams.
Yes, I don't think it's as much of a problem in yesterday's game than it was against LSU or South Carolina the first time. Whereas you fought way further into the fourth quarter this time, and with
about four minutes
to go, you look up and you're down a possession with the ball.
Yeah,
and then from there, obviously South Carolina able to pull away, but they're getting there. They made another step, and especially on the road to battle that far into the fourth quarter against a team in South Carolina that in the fourth quarter at home this year, they did it against UConn, especially. Just finds a way to pull away. I mean, you go from single digits to up 18, I think is what they won by against UConn earlier in the year. So it's a team that does that. But to be able to battle that far, they're making strides at the very least against these teams. I think it's a little bit skewed because you're playing LSU and South Carolina teams with so much depth and so much talent, several levels deep, that they can just wear you down. And they did that in Knoxville. Both of those teams did that in Knoxville where they just – you can bring out another player with fresh legs. Tennessee doesn't have that privilege. A little bit of a shorter bench of players that you're going to see for 20 or more minutes. And so teams like that can just drag it out, you know, make it to where you don't have that extra win that they do in the fourth quarter. But you got to find a way to find it. If you're going to win in the postseason, you got to put 40 minutes together in game after game after game. So you got to figure out something. You got another opportunity this weekend. Get a couple favorable draws here early in the SEC tournament to maybe set up a rematch with South Carolina on Saturday. So start finding that now. Put 40 minutes together in a few straight games and maybe see if you can change this.
Yeah, again, the fourth quarter problem wasn't really the problem on Sunday, but it's happened against some of the better teams this year. I remember that Ohio State game earlier this year. That one just got blown way out of proportion late. Just couldn't hang with the Buckeyes. But, you know, like you said, this team is taking steps, you know, took the fight further in the game, which is always a positive against, again, an undefeated South Carolina team. It's been a struggle all year. Depth isn't really your thing. Of course, you're playing about five or six girls off the bench, but some of them aren't really putting up the numbers you need them to. Like you'd like to see probably eight from Hollingshed on a normal night. Maybe get Kaya Wynn up close to that 6 or 8 points as well. And I know Sunday, I don't think Tess Darby hit a three at all. Still had an impact on the court. I think she still put up about 6 rebounds for him. So still made somewhat of a presence out there, but still need to take a step in regards to that. But like you said, it's taking steps right now, but it's really going to have to start turning into leaps at this point because it's way too late to start taking steps whenever, you know, most of the games from here on out are pretty much win or go home for you.
All right. Any last comments, anything?
No, look forward to seeing them this weekend.
Yeah,
as I'll be traveling with them, so look forward to that and seeing what they can get done in Greenville.
Let's hope they continue winning. And real quick before we head to the break, what do you think the ceiling of this team is?
It's tough because this team now is different from the team I saw early in the year. Early in the year, I didn't even think they'd make the NCAA tournament. Obviously, those expectations have changed. If they play like they did against A&M, Arkansas, and even in these battles against these top-ranked teams, I think they could make the second weekend at the very least because they're going to have to go through a one or a two in the second round. I think they could scrap with some of those USC, UCLA, Texas, those kinds of teams. And I don't know. From there, I mean, once you beat a one seed, who knows if they can make it the second weekend.
I think USC would probably be your best opportunity to advance and upset one of those higher seeds. I don't think they play very efficiently, especially with the volume of shots that Juju takes. And you know, it's kind of one of those high, kind of like a Kentucky. You know, Kentucky's got a lot of young guys that put up a lot of shots. If it goes in, they're a really good team. But if they're not able to hit them, then you see, you know, what they look like against UNC Greensboro and even Arkansas this weekend. They were struggling on the ropes.
Yeah.
All right. When we come back, we'll talk about Russell Wilson no longer with the Broncos to round out overtime. Stay right here.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared from cutting edge apparel.
When it's past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka you've actually heard of. I'm talking White Claw vodka soda made with White Claw premium vodka. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
And you can too. Pick you up a bottle of the Triple Wave filtered vodka that's been distilled 5 times. White Claw premium vodka comes in 4 flavors. black cherry, mango, pineapple, and just vodka. You haven't had vodka like this. No one has. White Claw Premium Vodka. Please drink responsibly.
I was afraid to cut the cord, but once I did, I couldn't believe it took so long to do it. Paying too much for my cable bill had become a bad habit. I either wasn't getting what I wanted or never knew where to find any of my favorite shows until it was too late. Plus, the prices just kept going up. Thankfully, I discovered a new way to watch, called Philo. For just $25 a month, I can catch all my favorite shows on networks like BET, MTV, and TLC. It even has Nickelodeon for my kids. I can watch anytime I want, anywhere I want. Plus, Philo lets me have up to 3 streams at once, so everyone can watch what they want at the same time. Throw in the unlimited DVR that saves all my favorites for up to a year, and this really is the best deal in TV. I just wish I hadn't waited so long. Sound too good to be true? Well, try it out for yourself, and you'll see why people who love TV love Philo. Go to philo.tv, that's philo.tv, and start your 7-day free trial now.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Your tax refund belongs to you, not an identity thief. Over $6 billion in tax refunds were flagged by the IRS for possible identity theft last year. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. They monitor and alert you to identity threats you'd miss on your own, even if you're careful with your personal information. And if you do become a victim of tax-related identity fraud, LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists ready to help solve your identity theft issue. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Let LifeLock help protect your financial info, so all you have to worry about is what you do with your tax refund. Go to LifeLock.com, save up to 25% off your first year. The promo code is HERD, promo code H-E-R-D, to save up to 25% off your first year. LifeLock.com. Identity theft protection starts here.
Back here on Overtime, rounding out a great Monday episode. Thank you so much for tuning in along with us. A lot of great content, a lot of great conversations. However, it was not God's plan for Russell Wilson to stick around in Denver, as the Broncos announced today that on March 13th, Russell Wilson will be let go from the Broncos, and they're now going to have to eat up $87 million as a part of his contract. Now, he'll be getting paid some of that next season. They're not going to eat all $87 million of it. I think there are a couple loopholes involved, but he will be paid the guaranteed part next season. He'll still be on the books, even though he doesn't play for the Broncos. But real quick, just to touch on it, you know, when this thing happened 2 years ago, I was not a fan of it. I actually thought that the Seahawks won big time, and it turns out they have. Because, look, I think the Seahawks had the better defense, the better weapons offensively, the better coach, the better I think the Broncos are a good organization, but so is Seattle. I don't think he really should have gotten out of there. I get that they were kind of stalling and kind of not making any real progressions each year. But they were still always a really good team, and they were always contending, at least in the NFC. You go to the AFC, there are a lot of really good quarterbacks, a lot of really good teams. It's crowded, and frankly, he learned pretty early on, and you know, had his worst season ever in 2022. Followed up this year with Sean Payton, who's supposed to be the guy that comes in and fixes this thing, and then they go on that little run in the middle of the season, but then you look at it, and he's like, you know, throwing 5-yard passes, checkdowns, you know, Justin Worley kind of numbers. So I was not very impressed with this whole. You don't like the Justin Worley story?
I can't lie. I forgot about Justin Worley a little bit.
That's probably one you want to forget anyways.
You like that? But, yeah, this thing never worked out. Was not going to work out anytime soon. If Sean Payne cannot have success with you, then I really don't know who will. There's talks about maybe Pittsburgh being an option here, maybe Minnesota being an option, depending on what they do with Kirk Cousins. Okay. I really don't think either of those are an upgrade. Well, I guess Kenny Pickett, anything's an upgrade from that. But at this point, what is Russell Wilson in his career? I really don't know where he goes from this point on. What do you guys make of it?
Just proves what I said, like you, 2 years ago, that I thought Seattle had cashed in at the right time and gotten rid of Russell Wilson. And, I mean, look at where the teams are now. Look at where Russell Wilson is now. I think that still holds true. The most gross part of this is that ridiculous number that's going to be on the books for the Broncos. Like you said, it's not going to be the whole $85 million, but even just seeing that number, man, it's disgusting. Considering the productivity you've gotten out of him or lack thereof, and you still got to put $85 million on the books, that is rough for Denver. Yeah, like you, I don't know if Pittsburgh's an upgrade. I think Minnesota is. They're a little bit better on the weapons range in terms of what they already have. Beyond that, I mean, Seattle looks great. Denver does not, and now I don't know where he goes from here.
Yeah. I'm not sure, thinking about it, I'm not sure if we see him at all, especially if Kirk Cousins does stay in Minnesota. I think Pittsburgh is, of course, for some odd reason, content with their quarterback situation, even though most places would not be. Russell Wilson just hasn't had or hasn't been what we've seen from him in Seattle at Denver whatsoever. I mean, there were talks a couple years back about Russell Wilson like halfway through the season being the MVP from the numbers he was putting up. Granted, that fell off, but just nowhere near that production in Denver. Seattle just swiped everything from him and is on an upward trajectory while the Broncos are. Could be looking for a quarterback in this draft class. Who knows about it? Just sitting here today, who knows?
Thinking about the last 2 years, real quick before we head out, has Drew Lock won a bigger game than Russell Wilson has in the last 2 years? The Seahawks upset over the Eagles on Monday Night Football. Is that a bigger win?
Yeah. Well, depends. What state were the Eagles in at that point, really? Because, we saw...
That's still one of the top teams in the NFL, though.
Did the Broncos beat
I guess
Kansas
they beat the
City.
Chiefs.
They beat the Chiefs.
Whatever. All right. Well, I just... whatever. All right, that's
Devil's advocate, sorry.
All right, that's going to round it out here. Yeah, anytime we're talking about Drew Lock, we know that the show's probably winding down. That's going to wrap it up here on a Monday on Overtime. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow, same time.